But Moses at 3 months old said, by faith, Moses. Well, he couldn't have faith, but it was his parents that had faith. And as a result, God placed Moses in what? Pharaoh's household, preserved his life. He lived there for 40 years. He had all of the benefits of being of the king's house. Now we come to one where it says, by faith, Jericho. Does Jericho, this pagan city from antiquity, have faith? No. By faith, Israel, in this case. So there are two of these in this passage that always make me smile when I read them, knowing that a city can't have faith, especially when it says they were disobedient in that matter. And so it's kind of interesting when we see this. Oh, let's see, the AV translated it. No, it doesn't translate it here. But it translates it back in Joshua that they were didn't have faith, but they were disobedient people. Very interesting material as we relate to these things. The acts of faith of Israel as a nation are two listed in the book. These are not individuals. This is the group. The first act of faith was Israel when they went through the Red Sea in the dispensation of promise. They went through on dry land. I'll walk right through it. We'll talk a bit more about that by faith. But it's interesting, when they went through by faith, God had to put a barrier. A double-sided barrier that taught Israel something very interesting. And that is, the Egyptians were camped right next to where the Egyptians were, where the Israelites were, and the Israelites were camped on the seashore. They had the sea behind them and the Egyptians in front of them, and they had the cloud between them. And we will see when you look back in Exodus that what happened, God led Israel by the cloud, and then when the Egyptians approached, he took the cloud from the front of where they were that led them and put them behind, which protected them. And like I say, it's a fantastic way. It violates every rule of physics. And it's really interesting what happens. But you know, by faith, guess what happened? Pharaoh's army drowned. They drank too much water. I'll say that there's a reason I said that. Because there's some fun things in Greek here. And they drowned. Every one of them. There's a funny little kink in that whole story, and that is, they went in with their chariots, and they were in such a strait that they took the chariot wheels off while they were in the Red Sea. I don't know, it must have been slippery or something, but they were in this state, and then they realized they were in really bad shape, and they decided Jehovah was going to lick them, and they'd better run, and they didn't. They drowned instead. Moses waves his stick, and the thing goes, and the waters go back together. How wide was that? Think about it. We will, as we get there. And then we come to Jericho. Israel, by faith at Jericho, did something that was kind of stupid. How do you win wars? By just marching around a city. That's what they did. They just marched around. And marched around. This is like somebody marching around a football stadium figuring they're going to win instead of getting on the field. Well, it's that crazy. But it's what God said. They had to do something that made very, very little sense and march around. Again, we look at numbers in scripture and what went on. That must have been a sight to see. I would have loved to have seen the seventh day when they marched around that from the crack of dawn 7 times. That would have really been something else to see. No question. I think Erwin would get that if he was here. He'd think, wow, that'd be something. I'd never forget that in that matter. And that's exactly true. And then with Jericho, we have the harlot, Rahab. An element of the story that is in Joshua chapter 2, where the spies, two spies come, and they come into her house, and she preserves them. And she's a very interesting lady from the account in Joshua 2, in that she forced them to make a vow because of her faith, that they would preserve her, her family, and her family's families. And by faith, she believed that. She believed that those who were in the city of Jericho were all going to perish. And she wanted a commitment to keep her family safe. In the end, what happened when the walls fell down? They moved Rahab and her family outside of the walls of the city and not in the congregation of Israel at that point, and they burnt the rest of the city completely. Well, theoretically completely, until somebody messed up. Well, I don't know whether we're going to get to that or not. So we have some very interesting things here when we talk about these three acts of faith. There are promises behind this all along. God promised Israel the land, and they go down to Israel for to Egypt for 430 years, it says, 400 years, depending on how you handle it. And they're gone for, you know, look 400 years back from now. Where was the good old USA 400 years ago? You know, yeah, Columbus had already found this part of the world, but it wasn't too long after. 400 years is a long time. And so there was a promise, and they returned to the land promised to Abraham, who had been dead for so many centuries. There was a promise. And these people were a bunch of pagan idolaters when they were in Egypt. They were not followers of Jehovah. Remember, Moses had to say, who shall I say sent me? They don't even know. And Jehovah says, say that I am sent. And they had to learn a whole lot of theology real fast, that their God was bigger than the gods of Egypt. And God gave both Israel and Egypt a lesson. And that is, through the 10 plagues, there were 10 parts of this lesson, that the God of the Israelites was greater than all of the gods of Egypt. And it's interesting how those 10 plagues involved the deities of Egypt, and which meant the deities that had been absorbed by the people of Israel, and they found out their gods were not that hot when they wanted to follow the gods of the Egyptians. And so we will talk a little bit about that, the promise for claiming the land. When they got to Jericho, they crossed, I mean, Jericho was across the Jordan. They were in Shittim and came across, sent spies across, and they were entering into the land. Jericho was a major problem. I'll say it again, but Jericho was one of the oldest cities in the world of the day when Israel came and won in Jericho. It's one of the oldest cities in the world. We're not sure. Archaeology has told us some interesting things. There have been two major, many year long digs in Jericho, and they have seen how old it is. And I don't always trust archaeological dating, but that's what they did. And so, again, Jehovah was victorious over the gods of Jericho as well as the gods of Egypt. They passed through on dry land. I'm making a little note of my introduction, the Egyptians drank too much water. And I just think there's some awesome humor in this when I read the Greek word here. And so we understand some of this. Now let's start by looking at, it says, by faith they, antecedent is Israel. By faith they passed through the Red Sea. It wasn't something that they wanted. They complained a little bit before they even got there. And remember, they could have taken the freeway, and God said, I'm going to take you on the back roads. That is, they could have gone in the way of the Philistines. But Jehovah said to them, no, it's not going to, or tell Moses, it's not going to happen that way, because if these Israelites end up in conflicts on the way, they will want to go back to Egypt, even though God sealed their doom and they would not be able to go back to Egypt without crawling on their bellies. I mean, and because Pharaoh decided he'd like to use their labor, but he sent them. That's why he went to the Red Sea. That's why it cost him his army, is because of his attitude. And it's as though by faith they passed through at a point in time, and they were active in doing so. And he says they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land. The idea of on dry land. Now, I'm not going to talk a lot about the Red Sea. I don't believe it's some marshland. I believe it was a Red Sea. I'm not going to go into a lot of that material because my purpose is to do three verses a day rather than one verse and 3 days. There's a lot of interesting history. I believe it's the Red Sea. You look on a map, you'll say Red Sea, and it's along there. I won't go into the background, but they crossed the sea. How deep was it? I don't think anybody took the time to measure. When it piled up on each side, I don't think you wanted to go out there with a tape measure and see how deep it was. I think there was kind of an interesting act of faith when you walk across and you walk in the dust between your toes and you're looking at this wall of water on both sides and you're whichever side's closest to you. They passed through the Red Sea and dry land. How much was that water spread? Back in the Ten Commandments days with Charlton Heston, they had an example in Universal Studios of the Red Sea. Some of you may have seen it. Some of you may have seen it on TV as it spread. You know, it was interesting. I don't think it was dry land when I walked across there, and it wasn't that wide. If you're going to run 3 million people and all of their cattle across, I don't think it was as wide as this building. And that was kind of it was a little narrower than the width of this building. That many people in one day, they'll get 3 million people and all of their animals. I mean, that was not a narrow, it had to be several miles wide where that blockage was and where it dried out. When you think about it, just realize this miracle is a lot bigger than most of us think, even in the comic books, even in the Ten Commandments. To put that many people across. And so they went across the Red Sea by faith. They had been camped there. The encampment had to be along that banks for quite a distance because there were so many of them. And so they went across the Red Sea. And let's say, I think the conservative estimate would be 3 million people. And how many animals do 3 million people have? You know, it was very interesting how they must have, to get across. And so what does it say here? This is the New Testament interpretation of the Old Testament. It says in the verse, which the Egyptians saying to do were drowned. Okay. That's a terrible translation if you really want to know. They stood there and they tried to figure it out and they said, now their cross, and they got across and the water didn't come back. So we're going to, do we want to try it or not? Do we want to put it to the test? You don't see the word test or tempt in the King James Version. And that's a word that is here. that you can't see. Put it to trial. Pyrazo is a word for tempt or test. This is the noun from it. And so they had determined that they were going to take the test. If these people could do it, they didn't think by faith, but they could do it by faith, we should be able to take the same test and pass. Through, over. And so that's what they did. They took the test. They stepped out with the test. With that much, that dryness, I'm sure they all, their engineers calculated. Now, if the water comes back, maybe we can get out of there before it comes back. And we have fast horses. They had all of the chariots of Egypt came into the water. They had cavalry. They had a horseman. They likely had foot soldiers. Pharaoh's own chariot was in part of that. And so they went and took the test. And the word that is translated, they essayed to do so. They took the test. They were drowned. Now, the word drowned is the one I still smile about. It's an intensive form of drink. Pino is a word for drink. And you can't quite see it in the way the form is here, but it's in first eras. It's a word. They thoroughly drank. You know, I mean, a lot of things can kill you. Water can kill you. You can drink too much of it. And that's what they did. And it has the idea of completely drink it. And so I make that note. I put the note in my outline, if you're following, to overdrink intensely, so it means to drown. They had lungs full of water. That's what happened. Simple account, short account, and that kind of thing. But as we go to Exodus chapter 14, we have a little bit more details, and I am not going to go through all the details of 14. If you want to read it, read these parallel passages of this material today. I mean, all of these chapters, it's just interesting what happens. We arrive at 14:19. The Egyptians, God hardened the heart of Pharaoh. He's going to teach him a lesson. You'll notice how many chariots in verse 7. He took 700 chosen chariots, all the chariots of Egypt. The captains over every one of them. And the Lord hardened them in verse 8 of 14 of Exodus. Hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the sons of Israel. And the sons of Israel went out with a high hand. When it says high hand, it has the idea they went out as those who were kind of victorious ones in leaving. They weren't going out to go out and camp and do a festival or a feast. They were leaving town. And they went out with what? Remember, the Egyptians were only too happy to loan them all of their wealth. I mean, they were giving individual Israelites their gold and their silver and their family heirlooms. And so they went out on a good note, as it were. But the Egyptians didn't think so. And so in verse 9 it says, the Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them in camping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth, before Baal-Zephon. Now you see here, it tells you a little bit more than it's just chariots. You have chariots. You have cavalry. Cavalry. As a kid, I'm living my childhood again. It's for funny reasons. Right after World War II, and during World War II, but I didn't know it then, but afterwards, there was a cartoonist that wrote in the European field, especially in Italy, named Bill Malden. And he printed his cartoons in Stars and Stripes and became syndicated here. Was really well known as a kid. I became a good friend of Joe and Willie. They were his two favorite cartoon characters, for some of you who may have remembered And I happened to run across a biography of Malden. I didn't realize he was as liberal as he became, but it was interesting. The most famous cartoon he did was I think he was a colonel. I'm trying to remember his rank, because you have to, with Malden, you had to know a lot about the military. I mean, the rank he had, his bars or whatever, if he was a lieutenant, whether he had one or two bars and all of that. But he did have the clear cavalry insignia. And the picture is, here's his Jeep, stuck in the mud, with smoke coming out of it, and he's standing there with, of course, his pot helmet on, his steel helmet on. He's standing there with his .45 caliber revolver, and he has his hands over his eyes, and he's shooting the engine. No more said than that. And it was, I mean, there's quite an interesting irony, you know, the cavalry. And they had cavalry. They had foot soldiers. They had what we call infantry. And so you have that listed here when it says his army. And they show up, and what happens? In verse 10 says, when Pharaoh came near, the children or sons of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. They were very afraid. And the sons of Israel cried out unto the Lord. They didn't do a lot of crying out unto the Lord in a lot of cases. They'd been through a Passover. They should have known a little bit. And they said unto Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness or the desert? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth from Egypt? Why have you done this to us? We're going to die here, and the Red Sea is going to be red with our blood. Is this not the word that we did tell you in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? We are, it'd be better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness, the desert. So what happens? Moses says, stop fearing. Verse 13. Stand still. Stand and pay attention. And look, see the salvation of Jehovah, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom you've seen today, you shall see them again no more forever. Goodbye, Egyptians. The Lord shall fight for you, so keep your mouth shut. No, it says hold your feet here. Listen up. Pay attention. God's going to deliver. And so what happens? The Lord tells Moses to lift up his rod over the sea, and it will, I mean, divide it in verse 16. And the sons of Israel will go through on dry ground in the midst, or in dryness in the midst of it, the sea. Then he says, and behold, I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. And I will get honor upon Pharaoh and upon all of his hosts and upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord as they drown. No, I didn't say that. When I've gotten my honor upon Pharaoh and upon his chariots, upon his horsemen. And the angel of God, I believe this is that second person of the Godhead. This is one of those proofs that the one who was in the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud was the second person of the Godhead. Went before the camp of Israel and removed and went behind them. Now see, the angel of God was in the cloud that led them on their way out. And so it moved from in front of them, in front of the Ark of the Covenant, to the back. And it says the pillar of the cloud went from before their face, stood between behind them, and it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. And it was a cloud and darkness to them, that is, to the Egyptians. And it gave light by night to these, the Israelites, so that one came not near the other all night. So they couldn't even send a spy through to check it out on either side. the cloud relocated, and it was a means of protection. And Moses stretched his hand out. And what happens? It says, the Lord or Jehovah caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea dry land and the waters were divided. A strong east wind came right down the gorge. Now, when you think of where it is over there on the Red Sea, anything coming from the east is going to come from where? Sinai Peninsula, from the desert. It's a hot air. And that's what would happen. It helped dry it out. That's a miracle in itself, isn't it? I mean, you'd think it'd be mud. And it says it was dry. And so when the children of Israel went in the midst of the sea upon dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right hand and on their left, they probably could see the walls of water as they went across. Might have been a mile away, but they should have been able to see it as they marched. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them in the midst of the sea. We know from Hebrews that they decided to take the test and fail. Even all of Pharaoh's horses and his chariots and his horsemen. And it came to pass in the morning watch. See, I have to read this because I mentioned things and I have to prove it out of scripture. In the morning watch, the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of cloud and troubled the host of Egypt. The army of Egypt troubled them. They did crazy things when they were troubled. How do I know in that verse? And they took off their chariot wheels and made them heavy. Is really what it said, or made them go heavily. So the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. And so what happens? They're in trouble out there. Moses, he says, stretch your hand. And then next thing you know, they get to drink a lot of water. It says the sea came upon them after Moses stretched his hand. Verse 27, he stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the water returned to his strength when morning appeared. And the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. The word overthrew has the idea of shook them off. It's like shaking leaves off a tree. He did that with them. And the waters returned, and they covered over everything of Pharaoh, and there remained not so much as one of them, end of verse 28. Not one. Boy, the Red Sea must have really been littered with corpses. And corpses of men and horses. And it says, the Lord saved Israel that day, verse 30, out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. Israel saw the great work, or the great hand. I love to see that, the hand word here. The power of God in the hand, which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord. Notice the next line. And they believed the Lord. Hebrews says by faith they crossed the Red Sea. Exodus says when they saw the results, they believed the Lord. So their faith was enhanced essentially here. And it's that word amen here. And they believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Act of faith on the part of Israel. Big deal. Millions of people had an act of faith, and they went and stepped forth. Now, our next act of faith is down in verse 30. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. It says, by faith, they fell down. And it was the faith of Israel. So, and here we are. And I need to say this at this point. Red Sea is prior to the dispensation of law. Still in the dispensation of promise. We get to Jericho And we know we have 43, 44, 45 years in the interval where there is no mention of an act of faith on the part of Israel or anybody else. That's interesting, isn't it? Now, if you read everything in between, what do you find? Israel, the marks of their journey to Sinai were high-pointed by grumbling, 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 grumbling. They bellyached their way to Sinai. At Sinai, they still complain. Then they, when they're able to leave about 3 years after everything happened, they camped at Sinai. God had to take care of them in a miraculous way. How do you water and feed 3 million people and their animals? Jehovah did. Should have said, we've got a God so big he's going to take care of us no matter where we are. And so they almost reluctantly leave. They head toward the promised land, and as they head north, they get to Kadesh Barnea. They send 12 spies out, one representative of each tribe, and they come back and they give a report, and they say, we're grasshoppers, the majority report was. And Joshua and Caleb said, no, we can go take the land, let's go get them. And so they sided with not Joshua and Caleb, but they sided with the 10 spies who were afraid to go into the land because there were giants in the land. That is Nephilim, Anakim, Raphaim, whatever you want to use to describe them. No faith there. God says, okay, it's going to take you 40 years because you've got to have this whole generation of people die. Everybody over 20 years old is going to have to die except who, for who? Joshua and Caleb. And so they all had to die, so they're wandering around and have this monstrous cemetery as probably 600,000 at least died. Because remember we talked about the 600,000 Gebarim, that is strong men, and they probably all died. That's a big cemetery. A lot of people died in that. No, that's back last week, guys. That's that one. Okay. And so what happens? They wander around for 40 years, and in the process, what did they do? They lost Miriam, Aaron, Moses, before they get into the land. Their leadership, not because of their faith died, they died because of their lack of faith. Moses got mad and struck the rock. He didn't just speak to it by faith. We know these stories. And so they arrive, and Joshua, the young man, is now their leader. And that's why the reports that we see on this account is over in Joshua. And in Joshua 6, we have the record, Joshua. We have the record of the fall of Jericho. The last major dig in Jericho was in the charge of an English woman archaeologist that's very familiar to me. And her name is Kathleen Kenyon, probably a shirt-tail relative. And she dug there. I think I told you the story when David and Julie and Kenyon were over there in Israel, and they were on this tour with this archaeologist. And Kenyon was not behaving himself very well. No, I shouldn't say that. They were calling his name more often than they probably needed to. And the archaeologist said, you know, one of our greatest archaeologists here in Israel, his name is Kenyon. And David says, I know, he's probably a relative. From there on, the red carpet was out. And every time they go by a dig where Kathleen Kenyon is at work, what does she do? He do. Well, Kathleen Kenyon did this here, this year. I mean, it just really was kind of funny, that story. But Jericho was one of her major gigs. Never got done. No, nobody finished Jericho. It's still, they still have the, I mean, the tell is still there. And they dug sections of it. Who preceded her? The name does not come to me. There was another major archaeologist that started it. He went in there to prove the walls were flat and couldn't find flat walls. But he did find fire, in the matter. So it's kind of interesting. So what happens? The instructions are in 6 of Joshua. Now, I'm learning as we've gone through here, and I haven't mentioned it as we've gone through. This is not a chronological list of by face in 11. Sort of, but not quite. Why do they mention David before Samuel in the next verse after that? I'm trying to debate what I'm going to do with that verse, in that. But in Joshua 6, they come and Jericho has battened the hatches. They won't let anybody in, won't let anybody out. It says in verse 1, Jericho was straitly shut up because of the sons of Israel. None went out and none came in. So they had sealed up the city because Israel was on its way. They understood that Israel had spied out the land. It's kind of interesting when it says, by faith, Rahab lied. No, that doesn't what it said, is it? But Rahab did, didn't she? She told the powers that be that the spies were gone, and she had them up under a pile of flax on the top of her roof at that time. It's just kind of interesting how God happened to work in that. So by faith. We'll see why maybe if we get there. Okay, so they arrive in Jericho, and God says, I've given you Jericho. He doesn't say that you're going to have a great, wonderful military victory. He says, I have given unto thy hand Jericho and the king thereof and the mighty men of valor, verse 2. Now he tells them what they're going to do in verses 3 and 4. You will surround the city, all ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thou shalt do 6 days. So they march around the city. Now, as I mentioned, we had a 600,000 figure we looked at before, and it's the word for that is translated men. It's the word giverim. That's the word for strong men. So let's say it's 600,000. Can you imagine 600,000 people walking around a town the size of Hillsboro and hiking around it? That would have been an interesting event, wouldn't it have? Well, this is Jericho. And they're down in not exactly the coolest place. There happened to be a nice spring there, which keeps flourishing over all of these many millennia. And in front of these, it says, 7 priests will bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horns. And the 7th day you will compass the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow with the trumpets. Then it will come to be that when you make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down. Shall not fall, just fall down. Interesting, and it's a perfect tense verb. Doesn't say it's going to be in the process, it's going to fall down. And it's going to fall down under it. It says flat in the King James, under it. Going to be a pretty devastating fall. And the people shall ascend each man straight before him. And so what happens? They take up the Ark of the Covenant. They have the priests with the trumpets, and they march around once a day for 6 days. 6 day, or on the 7th day, what happened? They got up early in the morning. Now let me get that verse so I have it in verse 12. Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priest took up the ark of the Lord, or Jehovah, 7 priests bearing 7 trumpets of ram's horns, before the ark, went on continually, and they blew with the trumpets. They had some kind of as they led them. Now, armed men went before them, but rearward behind them came the ark of the Lord, and the priests going along blowing with the trumpets. And this happens. It was early every day. You have the second day, verse 14. You have the third, seventh day when you get to the verse 15. It says, and it came to pass in the seventh day, they rose up early at about the dawning of the day, compassed the city after the same manner seven times. Only on that day, they compassed the city seven times. And they came to pass, and well, what happens? They had one big blast of the trumpets, and they said, shout. Now, the irony of it is, it explains what happens. There would be in perfect silence outside of those trumpets. I just wondered, having heard Chris's experience with a machine earlier in the week, the very idea, I mean, I know I've been through, and they said, don't cough. Don't cough. And you want to cough so bad, you've got more tickles than you know in that. I wondered if they said, don't cough when you're marching around. And that's what happened. They were quiet. And this city is identified as accursed in verse 17. We have no record of why it's called that. The word here is karam, which means ban, devote, or exterminate, or accursed. And even it and everybody in it, it was so accursed that there was nothing in that city that they were permitted to take except for gold and silver, and went in gold, silver, iron, and bronze. And it was to go into the treasury of the temple. And so they went in, and that word accursed appears many times. You see it again in 18. Keep yourselves from the accursed. The accursed thing is in there twice. If you get the accursed thing, you're going to have trouble. And they ended up with it with a guy named Achan in chapter 7. But it says in 19, but all of the silver, the gold, and the vessels of brass and iron are consecrated unto the Lord. The word consecrated is just holiness. They're holiness. They're set apart unto the Lord, and shall come into the treasury of the Lord. And so what happens? You have this great shout in verse 20, and the wall fell down under itself. The word flat is the same form we just read earlier. And every man marched in straight, and they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, and young, and old, and ox, and sheep, and ass with the edge of the sword. They killed everyone. Now, we have an exception clause, as it were. But Joshua had said to the two men that had spied out, it's kind of interesting in translating the King James, had said, which means it's a previous perfect, then it spied out the king. Go into the harlot's house and bring out from there the woman and all that she had as you swore to her. She forced them to swear. I don't know that she threatened them, but she forced them to. And the young men that were spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brethren and all that she had. And they brought all of their families. King James says kinsmen. It's the word for families. If you've ever listened or heard over the years, Sid Roth had a radio program, and he always would talk about mishpoka. That's the word families. And that's the word here. And left them with outside of the camp. Then they burnt the city with fire, and all that was therein, except for the what? Silver, gold, vessels of brass and iron. They put in the treasury of the house of the Lord. And Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive in her father's household and all that she had, and she dwelled in Israel even to this day. We're going to read a little bit more about that in a minute. Because she hid the messengers which Joshua sent to spy out. And so you have this picture. By faith they marched. That seemed like a silly thing to do, didn't it? What an interesting way to win a battle. They didn't pull their swords until the walls fell. So that's what happened. And it was by faith of the faith of Israel. Now don't forget when they marched around that. that they had the same sandals on they did 40 years before. They had the same garments on that they had at Sinai 40 years before. God had preserved those, an impossibility by the terms of the world. But he had preserved them. And they had this ongoing record, they had them on their own bodies, that God took care of them. Even though they hated manna. No, not all of them did, probably. He fed them. But it was just manna. Manna for breakfast, manna for lunch, manna for dinner. Manna, manna, manna. They didn't like it. When they decided they wanted more, God gave them quail and got them all sick. And so you have that issue with manna. Now, meanwhile, back at Hebrews. We come back to Hebrews 11 and 31. And it says, by faith, the harlot or prostitute Rahab perished not with them that believed not. Now, the word believed is not believe. It's the word disobeyed. We do not know, and we do not have a record of what kind of behavior there was in Jericho. Archaeology tells us they were an extreme pagan bunch of people. The possibility or probability they had child sacrifices and that kind of thing is evident in some of the archaeological materials that they have found. And they were obviously anti-Jehovah. They probably didn't even know who Jehovah was, except they heard some rumors. You know, the rumors they heard were that these people are coming through here, and they have slain the two kings of the Amorites, Sihon and Og, and this is noted in verse 10 because Rahab knows that, that they had come and defeated a lot of people, and they were quite concerned. I guess they figured if they could kill the spies, they would take care of the whole problem. And then in your face, they come and march around the city and they don't attack the city. Just march around it, in that matter. But by faith, the harlot perished not with them that believed not when she received the spies with peace. She was an enemy. She probably had a little bit of a prejudice in a way that many didn't because of her business, because she had to do with a whole lot of the people in the city. And so she had some sense. And in chapter 2 is the account of her taking them in. And it's kind of interesting. Joshua the son of Nun sent out of Shittim two men, I mean verse 1 of chapter 2, to spy secretly. I always see that word secretly and I didn't, huh? I can read this, saying, go view the land, even Jericho. And they went and came into the harlot's house, named Rahab, and laid there, or lodged there. It's kind of interesting. That wouldn't be too secretly, and they probably had any idea it was scandalous to go into that kind of a house, because they might be taking your turn with some of the guys in the city, in that matter. And so they went in, and they were there. I don't really like the word lodged, but it works good there. And it was told to the king of Jericho, saying, behold, there came men in here tonight of the sons of Israel to search out the country. You know what that means? It means they came in before the gates closed. Because they closed their gates at night. We know that from this context. So they came in before the gates closed, so the gatekeepers saw them. And they knew where they went. They went to the house of the harlot on the wall. She was on an outer wall. And the king of Jericho sent unto Rahab, saying, bring forth the men that are come to you, which are entered into thy house, for they be come to search out all the country. They have come with the intention of determining how they're going to take the country. He saw it as a definite offensive mechanism on the part of Israel. And the woman took the two men and hid them and said thus, there came to me men, or came unto me men, I do not know where they are, I did not know whence they were, because these came, who came looking for them. And it came to pass about the time of the shutting of the gate when it was dark that the men went out. So they came in very quickly and left very quickly. That's what she told the guys looking for. Where the men went, I don't know. The Wot, W-O-T is Old English for no. God damn. Pursue after them quickly and you will overtake them. They're not that far gone. Hop out, open the gates, run out and find them. And she brought them up into the roof of her house and hid them with the stalks of flax, which were laid in order upon her roof. Now what this was to dry them. And it was, I mean, it was for use in, making, products. Whether baskets, bowls, whatever. And so this was a green plant on the roof in Jericho, which was a great place to dry things. Where's Jericho? North end of Dead Sea. If you're in a high spot in Jericho, you can see the sea. It's within about 7 miles. You can see the bluffs from Jericho easily. And so it's hot. It's dry. The air is very heavy. And when I say heavy, it's very humid in the sense that it bakes well. You know, I mean, it would dry these, and so she sticks them up under these things. And the men pursued after them the way of, to Jordan under the fords. There was fords across the Jordan. So we're from Jericho to the normal place across between Shittim and Jericho. And as soon as they, which pursued them, were gone, they shut the gate, slammed the door, protect the people. And if they're in, they'll keep them in. I don't think they were thinking about that, though. And before they were laid down, she came up to them on the, upon the roof, and she said unto the men, I know. Now listen to this. By faith, Rahab. This is what she said. I'll explain to you why we see, they say by faith. I know. Somebody they translated no instead of what. I know that Jehovah has given you the land. That's a very interesting thing. And that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all of the inhabitants of the land melt because of you. I know it says faint, but I know what the Hebrew says. They melt before you. The fire's a little warm and the wax of the candle is melting. This word happens to be used again. For we have heard how Jehovah dried up the water of the Dead Sea for you. The crossing of the Dead Sea was a permanent memorial to the power of Jehovah of Israel. Sounds like somebody could do a sermon series on that. I don't know how many years that one took. I said I'd never preach on power because I knew how big the subject was, and I did. And that monument, the crossing of the Red Sea, was to haunt Israel for the rest of their lives because by faith they went across. They had never had faith in a lot of cases later, and he reminds them over and over and over. He brings them to what? Memory. It's called memorial. And it goes on and says, when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites that were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. You completely wiped them out. And as soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt. They probably translated it right in this case. It doesn't happen until later, though. Neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you, for Jehovah your God, listen to this, he is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. He is the God of gods. And she believed that. Now therefore I pray you, I beg of you. Now see, she's going to cut the deal with him. Swear unto me by Jehovah Since I have showed you kindness, that you will show kindness to my father's house and give me a true token, and that you will save alive my father, my mother, my brethren, my sisters, and all they have, and deliver our lives from death. Boy, she's a real bargain maker, isn't she? She didn't even leave out the cousins. Well, I don't know what he is here. And the men answered her, our life instead of yours. Our life in place of yours. If you utter not this, our business, and it shall be when Jehovah has given us the land, we will deal kindly and truly with you. Interesting, those two words. Kindly, having loving kindness. Truly, as the idea of seeing things as they really are in light of God and his revelation. We'll treat you that way. Then she let them down by a cord through the window of her house that was upon the town wall. And she dwelt upon the wall. She lived on the wall. So she dropped them outside the wall. One of my interesting memories of my father was the day when his son became a Hebrew professor. He decided it was time to review his Hebrew. He had taken Hebrew at Biola from a Scotchman, so he learned Hebrew with a Scotch accent. And he had used it to some degree, but it was not nearly what we ask. And so when I became a Hebrew prof, he started to do work in Hebrew. And to show me he still knew something about it, it was just so much fun. I love my dad. What a great event this was. He brought his notes from a message he preached out of here. And he had discovered that there were different kinds of words in Hebrew for the chords. And he did get a little carried away on it, but it was just so neat to see that from my father at that time, that God was using him in that way. And so you have a chord in 15. And she said unto them, get you to the mountain, go the other way. When he says, she said, get you to the mountain, she's saying essentially go up into the hills of the western plateau, which would be north of Jerusalem, which wasn't there then. And so get up into the boonies, get out into the, what do we call the Judean desert? But they didn't call it that. She says the mountain. Let the pursuers meet you. And hide yourselves there 3 days, and then when the pursuers are returned, then you may go your way. So she tells them how to escape without having been caught down crossing the Jordan. And the men said unto her, we will be blameless of this thine oath which thou hast made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, thou shalt bind this line, and he uses a different term here, with a scarlet thread, of a scarlet thread, so it would be identifiable in the window, which you did let us down by, and thou shalt bring, the word bring is just the word gather. You will gather, like sheep. You gather your father, your mother, your brethren, all of your father's household unto thee. And it's kind of interesting, isn't it? You'll bring it. Now, the word household is that idea of mishpokah, the family. Unto thee, they have to come into your house, and it will be that whosoever shall go out of the doors of thy house into the street, his blood shall be upon his head, and we will be guiltless. And whosoever shall be with thee in the house, his blood shall be on our head, if any hand be upon him. So have the meeting in your house, and when we take it to the city, keep them indoors, and we will preserve them. And if you utter this our business, verse 20, then we will be quit. We will no longer be under the oath which thou hast made us swear. And she said, according to your word, so be it. And she sent them away, and they departed, and she bound a scarlet line in the window. Huh. Isn't that kind of interesting? It seems like she immediately put the line in the window when they left. She didn't know when they were going to come back. But when they did, that line hung there for a period of time. It was a marker. What was it? It was a marker to her faith in God and the faith in these who were Israelites, who were supposed to be the children of God. And they went, came to the mountain, stayed there 3 days until the pursuers returned, and the pursuers sought them throughout all the way. In other words, when they went looking for them, they went all around the sides of the roads and the trails, tried to find them, couldn't find them. And so what happens? They returned from the mountain and passed over to Joshua, told them what happened, and they said unto Joshua, truly the Lord hath delivered into our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the land do melt because of us. Told you it was coming again. They melt. What a picture. By faith, Rahab made that commitment. By faith, she accepted those spies with peace because she believed that their God. How she found out what she did, we don't have no record. That's so interesting to see. And she was, what do I want to say, an independent businesswoman. Did you notice when we read through that? She did not have in-laws listed. No father-in-law, no mother-in-law. At that point, this is all her own family. And it's just an interesting aside related to that. And so when we were in 6, we saw that when they took and the walls fell down, Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive in her father's household. Now, I don't want to stop there because there's more to be said about Rahab. And let's go to Matthew 1, and we'll see what's more said about Rahab. Matthew chapter 1. And in Matthew 1, 5, yes, she lived in the land, but look at where she fell into the history of Israel, because her name is included, and I didn't go back to one of the other books where her name is mentioned as well, but in Matthew 1, 5, what does it say? Maybe I ought to start, where do I want to start? I don't want to read this whole thing. Okay. We have Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob in verse 2. And then it goes on down to Judas, Phares, Esrom, Aram, verse 4, Amminadab, Nasson, Salmon. Now in 5 it says, and Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab. Of Rahab. And Boaz begat Obed of Ruth. And Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. You see, she became a part of the line of David and of Messiah. It's interesting, there are 3 women mentioned in this genealogy. And it's interesting to me too that when we look at the 3 women, you have Rahab. I just lost the other one in my mind.
Verse 3,
Tamar. There we are. I just didn't remember it. And I know better. Bathsheba is not named by name, but it says out of Solomon, out of the, Solomon's mother was Bathsheba, 2 Samuel 12, 24. So you only have 3 women listed in there, in that matter. And Rahab is one of them. By faith, Rahab. What an amazing thing. this Canaanite-ish woman from Jericho, who was a prostitute, becomes a part of the line for Messiah and his coming by faith. That's almost worth looking at this whole, everything we've looked at, it makes a huge, interesting difference. And we've tried to, we've surveyed, and I trust we haven't gone too quickly, but we've needed to do so, because we kind of need to get out of chapter 11 someday here. And I'm not sure how I'm at a point now I have to make some big decisions. I don't think I want to have, one message with six or seven people. I mean, when I get to Samuel and David and then the prophets, that's more than one. That's a lot more people. But we'll have some interesting times there, in that. But interesting, where have we been? By faith, Israel crossed the Red Sea. By faith, Israel marched around Jericho and fell the city. By faith, Rahab. When you look at the intervals in between, there is a lot of years in between some of these acts of faith that are included here. And there's a reason. And that is there are 40 years where they didn't have a whole lot of faith. They didn't have a choice. God put the ring in their nose and they marched and marched and marched. And when he said to stop, they stopped and stopped. And they had to be obedient for 40 years and dig graves as they went. So, by faith. Faith chapter is great. Father, may you bless us as we think on these things. We're thankful for your word, and we pray that as we are reminded of faith, may we never forget when we come to this chapter that the last verse is there. They didn't have everything we have. But we have so much more. And that is just by simple grace. We do not deserve to be here. We could have just as easily been out there walking in that wilderness for 40 years. Or have died in the wilderness in that 40 years. But you seem fit to put us here at this time. And so we can only say thank you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.